The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio, Cincinnati Reds podcast, episode number 190. Wow, 190 podcasts. Again, with me on this episode, a guy that's been on a bunch of these, and I hope will be on a bunch more in the coming weeks and months and years, my friend and yours, Jason Linden. How are you today, Jason?
I'm well, but frankly disturbed that you ever thought to do this without me.
Oh, I wish I hadn't mentioned that, because I was just going to assume that you don't listen to it, so you would never know. You just think you were on every episode.
I mean, I am the center of my own universe.
Of course you are. And you're the center. Actually, you're not the center of my universe. The center of my universe, as everyone well knows, is Adam Dunn. You like Adam Dunn, Jason?
I like Adam Dunn. I like to tease you about Adam Dunn, but I do like Adam Dunn.
Yes. Well, you know, Adam Dunn was announced this week. He was the next inductee into the Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame. Top vote getter selected by fans, Reds alumni, and then some members of the media on what they called the modern player ballot. Now, we'd sort of gone all in a little bit, or I'd gone all in for Reggie Sanders, because I thought Reggie Sanders had been sort of a longtime snub, a guy that deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And, of course, Reggie was a guest on this podcast. But I could not be happier. I hope Reggie gets in next time. Could not be happier that Adam Dunn was selected, because this is a guy that took a lot of criticism while he was in Cincinnati. So to see him get in the first time he's on the ballot, certainly well-deserved. Congratulations, Adam Dunn.
Yeah, totally concur. You know, I was with you on Sanders. I think we talked about it on another podcast, but Adam Dunn no doubt deserves to be in, and it's great that he's in, and it's fun, and he was fun, and fun is good, and that's the end of my Dr. Seuss book, but yay, Adam Dunn.
Yeah, you know, he was the first one. We have a category. We have a bunch of different categories at redlegnation.com, and one of those we called Defending Adam Dunn, because we felt like we had to defend him from the onslaught of criticism that he got because of the things he did not do well, and there were things he did not do well. He struck out a lot, if that bothers you, and it bothers a lot of people. He did not play particularly good defense, and that's sort of being kind, describing it that way.
That's the one that bothers me. When I have the energy to talk about whether or not Adam Dunn was, like, there to try to defend Adam Dunn, it's the defense where I'm like, yeah, but the defense. But whatever. I mean, you know, he hit a bunch of home runs. He made the Reds watchable often at times when they were otherwise unwatchable. And there's so much value in those guys who allow a person to follow a bad team because they are so interesting to watch play. And Adam Dunn was definitely one of those guys in his peak.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right in terms of being one of the few things to watch on some miserable teams. I think of an alternate universe with Adam Dunn. Where, you know, he was a left fielder, stuck in left field, and was just not good. But I think of an alternate universe where the Reds don't have Sean Casey, and then Scott Hatterberg, and then Joey Votto. And maybe Adam Dunn can play first base. And, you know, maybe that mitigates the poor defense a little bit. Maybe he becomes a decent first baseman. I mean, he was athletic. He was he played quarterback at Texas.
And the weird thing about Adam Dunn is that for his first, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years or something, he actually wasn't really that bad in the outfield. I mean, he wasn't like, wow, he's brilliant, but he was perfectly serviceable. You didn't look at him and think, boy, he really can't play out there.
All right.
And, you know, he even stole some bases a little bit at the beginning. And then I guess he just kind of lost his legs or whatever, but oh boy.
People talk about him being one of the three true outcome guys, you know, home run, walk, or strikeout. And it's true, but at the end of his career, well, for a lot of his career he was, but you're right. That's not the way he started his career. He was athletic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he really was.
I mean, he was recruited by Notre Dame to play football. I mean, as quarterback. I mean, you know.
Is that a thing that people, Notre Dame, that rings a bell? Are they good at something?
They used to be. I don't know if they are anymore. They're not Virginia football. Let me just tell you that.
Well, who is, Kay?
Exactly. So he did sort of morph, but even after he morphed into the three true outcome guys, you know, we're talking about a guy that's number four on the Reds all-time list in home runs, third all-time in slugging percentage. He had four consecutive seasons of 40 or more home runs. Led or tied for the lead in home runs on the Reds for seven consecutive seasons. And my favorite little stat is that Dunn ranks eighth on the Reds' all-time franchise list for on-base percentage. Eighth, which is great. Who's ninth, Jason? Do you know who's ninth after Dunn on the all-time on-base percentage list? Reds history?
Pete Rose.
Pete Rose.
Wow, I was guessing on that too, so good for me.
Adam Dunn's on base percentage was .380 for the Reds, which is fantastic. Pete Rose, .379. That's the hit king, Jason. The hit king, you know.
I know. He was the king of hits or something.
He was the king of something. We're not going to talk about Pete Rose.
My favorite, Mike, can I share my favorite Adam Dunn stat?
Okay, sure.
Okay. My favorite Adam Dunn stat is, and it entirely comes, I brought this up a couple times. Several years ago, I wrote a column that was basically like, the purpose of it was, which player might do something historic this year, like is going to pass some other player or is on pace to do whatever. The year that Joey Votto didn't break the doubles record because his knee got hurt, I was writing that column. And Adam Dunn used to feature prominently in it because Adam Dunn was a little more than one full season away from breaking the all-time strikeout record.
Oh, man, that would have been exciting. I'm sure his critics would have had a field day with that one.
Well, but here, they would have. But here, I'm going to read you the list of the top 10 strikeout players in Major League history, okay?
Exactly. This is going to be great.
All right. We'll start at number 10 because that's fun. Mike Schmidt.
He was okay.
He was all right. Yeah. Mike Cameron.
Mike Cameron, good career.
Willie Stargell.
The Pops.
Yeah. Jose Canseco.
Oh.
Andrés Galarraga.
Andrés Galarraga, another good player.
Alex Rodriguez was all right.
Hey, they used to call him A-Rod. Do you know that?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, it was A-Rod.
Sammy Sosa.
Oh, Sammy Sosa.
Yeah.
He had a good career.
Adam Dunn comes in at number three.
Dunner.
With 2,379 strikeouts.
That's a lot of strikeouts.
Ahead of him is Jim Thome.
Did he have a good career?
He had a pretty good career.
Before you go to number one, though, I got to tell you.
8 strikeouts.
Well, that's a lot of strikeouts, but I think you mispronounced his name. I think it's actually Jim Thome.
Oh, you're right. And then number one, which I think everybody knows, is Reggie Jackson at 2,597. Thome was that. I was rooting for him to break the record, too, and he and Dunn both retired just shy. But, like, those are all good players. I mean, there may be some questionable personalities on that list, but... Those are all really good baseball players. So you don't get into the top 10 in Major League history in strikeouts without being able to do a lot of other things really well.
Well, you got to play long enough, and you can't play long enough if you're striking out that much if you don't do a lot of other things well.
Yeah.
So, that Reggie Jackson, they called him Mr. October. Did you know that, Jason?
I did. I think he was good in October. And I think it was for, like, what, the Marlins is who he played for, right?
I think the Miami Marlins. They were known as the Florida Marlins at that time, I think. I'm pretty sure.
Yes, right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, Adam Dunn struck out a lot, and it caused so many of mouth-breathing callers in to talk radio to just have an aneurysm. I guess it's good the way the game has developed that I don't really care. Strikeouts don't bother me. It's an out. I mean, I guess it looks uglier than other outs. Whatever. It doesn't bother me. The home runs and, you know, just the fact that he had such a good strike, knowledge of the strike zone and he was fun. Just a fun guy to watch.
Agree completely. Strikeouts don't bother me at all on a player level. And on an aesthetic level, I'd rather the ball in play more than it is in the modern game. But in terms of, like, assessing a player, yeah, no, I don't care.
Well, you know, in some ways, if you get putting the ball in play, it's a more fun game to watch. But
right,
I don't know. I just.
But winning is the most fun.
Have you noticed that? Wait a minute.
It's like better than losing.
I'm confused. You're a fan of the Cincinnati Reds. How do you know winning's better than losing? How would you ever know?
They've been good before, Chad.
Really?
It's only been a few years.
Oh my gosh, it's been like 38 years. I'm pretty sure exactly 38 years since they had a winning record.
Yeah, you're probably right.
It seems like it.
Just like the year before I was born. So.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Something like that. You're, you know, 3 years old.
It's back when they were called the Big Mauve Machine, as I believe.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yes, I think so. So, Adam Dunn, congratulations. And I tell you what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and talk about my favorite Adam Dunn moment, probably. We did add a chapter about Adam Dunn into our book that's coming out in April about the time he hit the walk-off grand slam to beat the Indians when they had been down 7-0. But my favorite moment is when Adam Dunn called the banana phone to talk to Marty Brenneman during a rain delay. You remember that?
That was a special moment.
It was a special moment, definitely. Adam in Milwaukee. Do you like Scott Hedeberg? Or do you think Scott Hedeberg's a good player? I tell you what I'm going to do is we're going to pause here and we're going to play that clip. Adam Dunn calling Marty Brenneman on the banana phone.
We now will go to a good friend of ours from Milwaukee who is standing by on the phone. Hello. Hello.
Hello, Marty.
Yes.
Marty.
Yes.
Marty, this is Adam. Marty.
Yes.
This is Adam from Milwaukee.
Hey, Adam, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Do you think Scott Hedeberg is a good player?
Yeah. Hello.
Marty? Marty?
Yes, Adam from Milwaukee.
Do you think Scott Hedeberg is a good player?
Do you think he's a good player?
I think he's overrated.
Who would you rather see play at first base? I can tell you're a big fan.
I am. Maybe Luke Stowe.
You think that'd be an improvement?
I think so.
A little young.
Defensively.
He's a little bit young, isn't he, Adam?
No. Is it still raining in Cincinnati?
It's just about stopped, Adam.
Do you have your shirt on?
Last I checked, I did, yes. Why?
Just curious.
Listen, I'm going to let you go now because I know that you're going to get your game face on because we're getting ready to go back on the radio shortly and you'll be listening to every word.
I love it. Have a good one, bro.
Thanks, Adam. Nice talking with you.
All right.
Adam from Milwaukee. Yeah.
That was Adam Dunn. Adam in Milwaukee. Jason, you like Adam in Milwaukee?
Who doesn't like Adam in Milwaukee?
Exactly. Now, let's move on to the rest of the current team. Adam Dunn does not play for the Reds anymore.
Sure.
And someone else that doesn't play for the Reds as well, I thought we'd just mention it briefly. The guy, and most years this would be, you'd think, this is crazy. The pitcher who led the 2017 Reds in innings pitched signed a deal today to pitch in Korea next year. And you would think that would be a bad thing under most circumstances. And I'm not saying it's good that Tim Adelman is no longer a Red, but Tim Adelman's no longer a Red. So any thoughts?
I think it's good for Tim Adelman. You know, he's going to – he was a 4A player. I mean, you know, I think we all know that. He was a contributor. Nobody is going to complain about Tim Adelman. But I think he knew as well as everybody did that he wasn't really a part of the plan and the rotation this year. And, you know, frankly, if we want to be encouraged by anything, we can be encouraged by the fact that ownership apparently let him go. You know, so that means they're thinking we're not going to need Tim Adelman this year, which could not be said in years past. But no, I think Adelman will go and play in Korea and probably be one of the better pitchers on whatever on his team. And yeah, I mean, everything I've ever heard of him is that he's a nice guy and, you know, wish him the best and all of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they needed him this year. to the tune of 120 some innings that led the team. You know, I think it's the only way to look at it is good for you, Tim Adelman. I mean, he's gonna bank a cool million, a little over a million as a 30-year-old. When if he stays in America, there's no guarantee that he's even going to be in the major leagues. So he's making a little money for his future, and it's a great story. Like you said, he's considered to be a nice guy. Everybody likes him, but just the story that he was actually cut by the Florence Freedom Independent League team and fought his way all the way back to the major leagues. Just easy to root for a guy like that. I don't think the Reds will miss him, but just in terms of personalities, he was a good guy to have around and very easy to root for, and happy that he's going to make a little bit of money.
Yeah, I just completely agree with everything you just said.
For the first time ever, man, it finally happened.
Happens. Don't count on it ever happening.
Now let's move on to some other topics around the Cincinnati Reds and the upcoming season, because we're already looking forward to 2018. And we've been doing a little feature at RedLegNation.com most days that we've called the Daily Reds Obsession. And Jason, you've contributed. I've contributed. It's just a fun little way to talk about some things happening with the Reds during the offseason when there's not a whole lot of actual news. Now, today's question, our Daily Reds Obsession, was this. What's the best case scenario for Homer Bailey? And what's the worst case scenario for Homer Bailey in 2018? You want me to go first, or you want to jump right in?
I'll jump right in.
I thought you might.
I think that the best and worst case, everybody's best and worst case scenarios are the same, really. It's he's healthy and pitches well, or he's not and pitches not at all, or briefly and poorly. excuse me. But I this has been the case with Homer, I think, since the injury issues start, which is that people have seen those flashes of brilliance from him, and it gets to be, rose-colored glasses, and that's kind of all they can see. So, today, I think in the thing, some of the other guys who commented and some of the commenters were, it seemed to me the tone was very much more, I feel like he's definitely going to be, a real solid starter, like a number three starter, maybe even better if we're lucky. And, man, I go and look at his game log, and I don't know about that. I think number three starter is probably realistically his absolute ceiling, and I think he's probably more likely a 4 or 5 guy.
Well, I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think the best case scenario, I do think, and I based it on what I saw from him as well. He was certainly he struggled coming back from that Tommy John surgery, and some really bad starts. But yeah, I saw lots of flashes of a guy that maybe not the Homer Bailey we used to have, but a pretty good one. And I think, the best case, and maybe we're saying the same thing, I think he could be a 3-plus win player.
I don't.
As a best case scenario. No, I don't think it's likely to happen. Let me go ahead and add that qualifier quickly. I think the absolute best case, he could get back to that. Now,
that's like 95th percentile at least, though, I think.
Well, maybe. I mean, we could argue about whether it's 80th or 95th, but it's not likely to happen.
Certainly.
But I think I'm not willing to say I guarantee it won't happen, I guess, is what I'm saying. I wouldn't bet the ranch on that. Worst case, obviously, as you're saying, basically.
Yeah.
More injuries, we never see Homer Bailey again. And that's actually probably more realistic than the best case because he's been so hurt lately. I think probably if I had to bet the ranch, if I had to pick what I think Homer Bailey's going to be in 2018 and 2019, if I had to bet what he's going to be, I would say he's going to be a pretty effective number four starter. Yeah, maybe number five, but, a back-end starter, a pretty effective one. If we have
back-end starter, I think is about right. And I think, one of the things for me that, or I guess a couple things that pop out is that though I guess it got better than it was when he initially came back, the control was never really great. He never seemed to me to really get a consistent handle on the walks. And then the strikeouts, they were there kind of at something approximating historic Homer Bailey rates, but the league is striking out a lot more than it used to. So average is different than what it was before in terms of how many strikeouts you have as a pitcher. So, in the league that he was last effective in 3 or so years ago, I think his numbers are a lot better, look a lot better to me than they do in the league that he pitched in last year. I guess is what I'm saying. I don't know if he's got the stuff to be more than a back end starter.
Maybe not. But you know, I could also see if he stays healthy, I could see him being a guy that makes 30 or more starts and pitches, you know, 180 innings or something. I mean, I don't have to squint too hard to see that. Now, how effective he'll be in those innings, I don't know. But
yeah. No, I completely agree with that. I think if he's, you know, the history with Tommy John surgery is basically that if a player comes back and really comes back, you know, you'll get several seasons at least of normal major league performance because that ligament's been replaced and that was the problem. And I mean normal major league performance in terms of, like, endurance. I can easily see him pitching 180, even 200 innings this, you know, next year, as long as he's actually healthy. I just think he's going to be a number 4 or 5 starter instead of a number 1-2 starter, which is what everybody hoped he would be.
But I feel like if we could get 180, 190 innings of Homer Bailey as a number 4 starter, man, I think that's a huge win. And sign me up for that right now.
Problems. It solves a lot of problems.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, and that's all the Reds really need him to be. He doesn't have to be the, you know, number 2 guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be great if he were, but again, don't bet the ranch on that. So, and I don't think we're too far apart. I think that the possibility that he's a number 3 starter, I think there's a little bit higher possibility than you think there is. I saw a lot of things that gave me some optimism. But you're always pessimistic about everything, Jason, so.
The world is darkness, Chad.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I just sang there, Jason.
I thought I saw.
Now, this is a little unfair to you, but I'm going to tomorrow's post, which will be up on the site maybe shortly after you have downloaded this podcast. Most of you will not have listened to the podcast yet, probably by the time it posts at redlegnation.com. So it'll be there. Go look at it. And you didn't participate, I don't think, this week in the Daily Reds Obsession. But tomorrow's question is the same thing, except about Anthony DeSclafani. What's the best case scenario and what's the worst case scenario? Go ahead. What's that?
That's a lot more interesting.
Extremely interesting. Yes. And there's a lot wider range of possible outcomes with him. Basically, what I said was, worst case scenario, it really is not a great question. I came up with the question. It's not a great one because the worst case scenario, everybody, obviously, he stays injured.
Doesn't pitch any, just like he didn't pitch any this year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, the best case scenario to me, again, and maybe it's just me being overly optimistic, but I think it's easy to envision the best case scenario if you try. He's going to be 27 years old. He was brilliant in 2016 before the oblique injury when he got hurt. But the time he was healthy, he was fantastic in 2016. Did not pitch, certainly at the major league level, in 2017. If his elbow is healthy, and that's the biggest if we're going to have on this podcast, if his elbow is healthy, I see no reason to believe at age 27 that he can't be maybe even an ace, but certainly a number 2 guy. As a 25-year-old, he threw 184 innings. It's not like he's not, you know, done that before. If they can get 184 innings out of him this year, I think that means that he's back, and I can't imagine that if he's healthy, he's not going to be an effective pitcher. At the bare minimum, if he's healthy, he's a number 3 starter. And I think it's much more likely that he's a number 2 guy. Talk about making Reds fans happy. That would help things tremendously.
I think I'm much more in sync with you here. I think, you know, the interesting thing, I suppose the difference between Bailey and DeSclafani is that with Bailey, like, all of the probability is in the middle. Like, the odds are he's going to pitch.
Right.
And probably accumulate some innings and be okay. With DeSclafani, he's probably either going to be good to really good or not play at all. Like, there's not really a middle ground, I don't think, in his circumstance. I think you're right. I think he's either a 2-3 starter or he doesn't pitch. And I think realistically, maybe 150 innings just because it's been a while is sort of the maximum threshold, but a good 150 innings.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all about health. If he's healthy, there's just no reason to believe he's not going to be effective.
Yeah.
He's always been effective.
Yeah.
And you know, 27 years old, but man, that elbow, that scares me. It scares me.
It's terrifying.
Gosh. And, you know, we did this before last season, and we probably shouldn't do it this year, but we're going to get towards closer to April, and you and I are going to be on one of these podcasts, and we're going to look and say, oh, man, Anthony DeSclafani's healthy, and Luis Castillo all season long. And, you know, Homer Bailey's healthy, And we're going to start thinking, oh my.
Dave Red signed Yu Darvish.
Yes, or anyone, but yeah, certainly a top shelf starter. We're dreaming playoffs at that point. I mean, aren't we?
I'm always dreaming playoffs. That's what spring training is for, man.
The problem is it's been only a dream for far too long.
In July, in March, it's all about potential.
Oh, but then, yeah, and if you do that, you get another starter. So that's four starters, and you're dividing up the number five starter between, you know, Tyler Molly and Sal Romano and Robert Stevenson and, you know, Cody Reed, Amir Garrett. I mean, you got a bunch of guys. Somebody will win that spot that's pitching effectively.
You're already talking me into it, Chad.
Let's do it. Let's go get Yu Darvish.
You're already talking me into it.
All right. How much do we have to put in the – we may have to contribute some money to help sign Yu Darvish.
I don't know. I got like $10 in my wallet.
Yeah. I'm in for 15 at least.
All right.
So somebody contact Bob Castellini. BobCastellini@BobCastellini.com.
I mean, everything I've seen says that they think it'll take 20 to 25 a year to sign him, and we've got that between the two of us, right?
Exactly. Yeah. 25, yeah. So we'll just go ahead and do it. I can't go in after the first year. Somebody else is going to pick up the slack, but we'll cover the first year.
We'll figure it out.
No, I mean, Yu Darvish is a pipe dream. But I still don't see any reason why they shouldn't. I know they're talking about, maybe let's wait until next offseason, but I don't see any reason not to go get a real pitcher.
I think the Reds do something this year. I'm actually kind of starting to think, I don't know, there's such a stable of young pitchers. It depends on their assessment of them. I'm sure they'll probably sign somebody, but I'm starting to wonder if they're going to focus more on maybe trying to add one more bat somewhere in the lineup. I really am starting to be able to imagine them parting ways with Billy Hamilton.
I'm just basically going to pretend like you didn't say that.
I understand, Chad. I understand.
But, I mean, I'd trade Billy Hamilton for, you know, Clayton Kershaw or somebody. I mean, that would help just the Reds. Paper. Yeah, I'd do that.
Yeah.
No, all joking aside, I think you're probably right. I'm starting to sense of that a little bit myself, and probably not an awful idea. I mean, I love Billy. Everybody knows I love Billy. He's not become the Billy I hoped he would, but I see him in center field in San Francisco or in Colorado or in Seattle or one of these big parks. And you talk about maximizing his effectiveness as a player. Putting him in center field in one of those big parks and let him go run and get everything. And that's probably where he's best suited. Let him bat ninth and play a fun center field.
Yeah. Put him in a big center field, and he'll be a lot more valuable there.
Now, you talked about going and getting a pitcher, and I do want to mention, we don't have to talk about it much, but I do want to mention it because the Reds claimed a pitcher off waivers this week, and actually it's a more interesting signing than most waiver wire pickups, although the last waiver wire pickup, the last couple that I can think of that really helped the Reds were Scooter Jeanette and Dan Straley, who turned into Luis Castillo. So sometimes it works. But this is a left-handed reliever, Kyle Crockett, and he's 25 years old, 3.44 career ERA, a good-looking left-handed reliever who was drafted in the fourth round back in 2013 and sort of rocketed his way through Cleveland's minor league system. And I think there was a numbers crunch is the way I understood it in
Cleveland. Do the Indians have a lot of good pitching or something?
A little bit, and he kind of got squeezed out, and he's only 25. Yeah. And I think
he's like a shoe-in bullpen piece, frankly.
Oh, yeah. No, I think pencil him in right now. Left-handed reliever. You know why I like him, though, and why I mentioned it, right? Do you know?
I don't know if I do.
All right, I'm going to tell you. Get ready. Oh, this is exciting.
I'm ready.
You can answer this question. You'll know the answer, even though you don't actually know the answer. Okay. Do you know where my guy, Kyle Crockett, played his college baseball?
Oh, was it at Georgetown or was it at St. John's?
Oh, don't start this nonsense with me. Get out of here. You're off my podcast forever. He was part of the national championship, University of Virginia Cavaliers, along with Reds first-round draft pick Nick Howard, who's not panned out quite as well.
I could have guessed that, but I had to tell you.
I know. That's the way you roll. He was he had a 1.98 ERA at UVA. Just dominant. He was great. So,
So you're gonna replace the woo with the wahoo-wah, right?
Wahoo-wah, baby, wahoo-wah. Boy, their basketball team's looking good this year. Oh, my. I got to do a Virginia basketball podcast. That'll be next year. We're not going to waste we'll lose every listener that we had, even though we only have one listener. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Chad's mom.
All right. I want to dig into a couple of other best-case, worst-case scenario. But first, I want to ask you another question. And I'm happy to answer it first if you want to think about it for a moment. but it's one that we answered at the site this week in our Daily Reds Obsession, which is this. Which Reds player who played before you were born do you wish that you had been able to watch play? And my answer, I'll tell you, was really, you know, I wish I'd seen Joe Morgan play in a Reds uniform, but I did see him play at the very end of his career for, you know, the Oakland A's. So I actually technically saw Joe Morgan play, so I can't say him. A bunch of others. Frank Robinson is a guy that I think is probably the most underrated player in the history of baseball. That's a guy, but that's an obvious pick, I thought. So I went with Yul Blackwell, the Whip Blackwell, who is such an interesting guy. I mean, it's another guy that we devoted a chapter in our upcoming book to. He was an all-starter in every one of his six seasons with the Reds. He had this crazy fastball and this sort of high leg kick and this big sidearm delivery that caused him to fool everybody. And he's just a fun guy. Fun guy to root for, evidently, and just dominated the National League, scared everybody. I was listening to a Reds-Dodgers game during Vin Scully's last year in 2016. And just a random mid-September game against the Reds, Vin Scully starts talking about, and I got to quote the quote. I wrote the quote down, tried to put it in the book, and didn't have room. So, but there was a remarkable pitcher years ago at the Cincinnati Reds named Yul Blackwell. He was terrifying at times for a right-handed batter. How do I know that? Pee Wee Reese once told me about Yul Blackwell, and he said, he's the only pitcher I ever saw who I feared. So if Pee Wee feared him, it was pretty terrifying. But anyway, Yul Blackwell is my choice, who a lot of Reds fans these days may not have heard of, but I think he would have been a fun guy to watch. Now, what about you, Jason Linden? Who's the one Reds player that played before you were born that you would have liked to have seen?
I'm thinking. I've got several answers. I'll talk my way into one here in just a second. I just need to take a minute and express surprise that your answer wasn't Wayne Krenchecki.
Oh, my gosh. I saw Wayne Krenchecki play.
Oh, you did?
Oh, my gosh. 1983, my first. I got to tell it again. I've told it before. While you're thinking. 1983, Johnny Bench's last season. By that time, he was just playing third base for the Reds. A little first base, but mostly just third base, not catching anymore. And I'm telling you, I was so excited because all I'd heard about was Johnny Bench this and Johnny Bench that. And I probably should have said Bench is the guy I never saw play because I didn't get to see him play that day at my first major league game ever, little 8-year-old Chad Dotson. Because I got in the stadium and looked up at the scoreboard and they showed the starting lineup and Wayne Krenchecki was playing third base. And I've never been sadder, more disappointed in my life. And I've never forgiven Wayne Krenchecki for this. The next day we had tickets to the game and everybody was with another family. And everybody, my family and their family, all decided they wanted to go to Kings Island instead of going to the game. And so I threw a fit. Because I wanted to go watch Johnny Bench play. That's all I'd heard my whole life was Johnny Bench this and Johnny Bench that. So, Wayne Krenchecki, you're dead to me. All right, now, thanks for that, Jason. It's up to you here. Go ahead.
So, I go your route to an extent where it's like I would kind of want to see the non-obvious player because I'm a contrarian by nature. But, you know, I really might just have to go with Frank Robinson, though.
It's a great choice.
It's because, boy, I mean, his I don't think I think Frank Robinson is, like, as much as everybody recognizes him as one of the greatest players to ever play baseball, I think he's still kind of a little bit underrated.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, his numbers are just amazing. They're mind-boggling.
I can't believe he's not considered like Hank Aaron and Willie Mays.
That's what I mean. He should be. Like, he's in that category. And he just, you know, he's the one I use whenever I write these articles about how is Joey Votto going to age. I always look at Frank Robinson because, as impossible as this is to believe, when the Reds traded him to the Orioles when he was an old 30,
right?
He then proceeded to be better for the Orioles than he was for the Reds.
And think about it. He averaged 6.4 wins above replacement in his 10 years for the Reds and went on to get better.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. It's remarkable. I mean, he was an unbelievable player well past what is supposed to be a baseball player's prime. And, you know, he had a a 3-win season at age 39. He had a 4-win season at age 38. Like, man.
Yeah. You don't see that.
I would like to see him hit when he was like 27.
Oh, man. Right in the prime.
Yeah.
And he could do it all. He won a Gold Glove Award. I mean, he had 63.8 wins above replacement just for the Reds. And that's a Hall of Fame career by itself, as Steve Mancuso
noted. It's Mike Trout. I mean, it is.
No, it absolutely is. And it really frustrates me that he's not considered. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, you know. But if you ask 100 baseball fans, even knowledgeable baseball fans, but relatively knowledgeable, you know, would any of them put him in the category with Hank Aaron and Willie Mays, who are his contemporaries? I don't think so.
And, I mean, and God, like, let's just pause for a minute and talk about era. Because it was the 60s.
Right.
In 1962, because I'm staring at his numbers now because I pulled them up, he hit 39 home runs and his slash line was 342, 421, 624 in 1962.
Oh, gosh.
Like, hitters didn't do that in 1962. Like, that was still the era of the pitcher. And that is just an absolutely remarkable. I mean, all of his numbers are just, they're out of this world.
We talk about alternate realities, and the alternate reality I love to think about is, what if the Reds hadn't been so stupid and dealt him away at age 30, and he would have been a career Red? I mean, he's the best player, and it's not even close. He'd be the best player in franchise history.
No question.
I mean, we can argue about who that is now.
He's in the conversation now anyway.
Yeah, but he's in the conversation. Yeah, just only in the 10 years he played. Oh, I wanted to answer him because of that, because I do feel like he's the most underrated guy around. But I don't know. I tried to go for something that was not obvious, but that's not. I didn't want that to be a slight on Frank Robinson.
Yeah.
What a great player. Could probably still hit 280, I'd say.
Yeah. So there's like that apocryphal old Ty Cobb story, right, where he's like 52 and somebody asks him what he'd hit now. And he says, oh, about 280. Right. And then they say, oh, really? You think pitching's got that much better? He's like, no, I'm just 52.
Right, yeah. And Ty Cobb probably could. Let me circle back to Yul Blackwell for a second, because this is something that did make the book, and it's my one of my favorite parts of the book. We did a lot of research. The book's The Big 50, Cincinnati Reds. The men and moments that made the Cincinnati Reds. I mean, it's available for pre-order now on Amazon, and it'll be released in April of this year, right around opening day. But anyway, one of my favorite parts, we did a lot of research, and I kept coming across, when I was researching Yul Blackwell's chapter, I kept coming across different nicknames that everybody gave him. It was crazy. It was just like, that was a one of the late 1940s, the great delights of baseball was describing the way Yul Blackwell looked. I mean, the whip was his nickname, because the way he had this sidearm delivery. But he was called Young Bones and Skeleton. The Associated Press said he was, quote, built like a vaulting pole. The Sporting News called him Cincinnati's thin man. The Cincinnati Enquirer called him a human windmill on a number of occasions. One of the Reds' coaches, Hank Gowdy, said he was, quote, a great long strip of whalebone with the pitching motion of a tarantula and a sidearm sinker that could break your bat. He coiled up his right arm like a rattlesnake. A couple of New York writers called him a fly rod with ears. And one said he looked like a Picasso impression of an octopus in labor. So I just I had to mention that, because we kept running across these crazy descriptions. It was hilarious.
That's my favorite right there.
A Picasso impression of an octopus in labor.
That's beautiful. That's just fantastic.
So that's why I wanted to add him. Another good story about Yul Blackwell is he was pitching in like a semi-pro league, working for an aircraft factory out in California. And playing in semi-pro league out there against some guys like Ted Williams was playing with him out there. But the Brooklyn Dodgers found him first, and they wanted to sign him. And they said, I will sign with you for whatever number you want to give me. Pay me for whatever you want. But the only way I'm going to sign is if I get an invitation to spring training. Now, after spring training, you send me where you think I need to go. I'm not demanding I be on the major league team, but I want an invitation to major league camp. And the Dodgers, they evidently, their scout phoned back and talked to Branch Rickey, and he said, and Branch Rickey sent it up the pole, I think, to the owner. And they said, no, we don't want anybody on camp that's not going to make the team. And a couple weeks later, a Red scout came along, and he made the same demand. I don't care where you send me afterwards. Send me to the minors if that's where I need to be. I want an invitation to spring camp, and you can pay me whatever you want. And the Reds were like, eh, we've been losing. Why not? And, of course, he made the Reds out of spring training as an 18-year-old before he went off for to the war after the year afterwards. But so anyway, Yul Blackwell. We've talked more about Yul Blackwell than I thought we would.
Can I, while we're at it, though, because I like to look numbers up, just throw out a kind of crazy number?
Yes, absolutely.
So, all right. The year that he apparently had the highest strikeout rate was 48. He struck out 7.4 batters per nine innings, okay?
Okay.
This is roughly, I think it's actually almost exactly double the major league average strikeout rate for that era.
Really?
Which makes it equivalent in modern terms to a pitcher striking out like 17 batters per nine innings, and that's not hyperbole.
Wow.
So, of course he was terrifying. He must have been just... I mean, you know, it was apparently the equivalent of Aroldis Chapman if he'd been allowed to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, literally, yeah.
There so we can kick it again if we want.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, right. And, you know, he missed 3 years to the war. And you wonder what that would have done to his career numbers. But just a fascinating guy in Reds history that maybe a lot of current-day Reds fans don't really know a lot about. So... and that was the reason why I wanted to give him a chapter in the book. It's because he's sort of an not well known amongst current fans. So, Yul the Whip Blackwell, an octopus in labor, a Picasso impression of an octopus in labor. Let's go for one more before we finish up. Let's go with one more best case, worst case scenario. And this is one from that you did contribute. I think that you participated in, but I think it's I think it's interesting because I love the guy. He's been on Red League Nation Radio a couple times, and it's Devin Mesoraco. What's the best case and worst case scenario for Devin Mesoraco? You want to go first? Or you want me to?
I'll go first.
It's sad, though. It makes me sad.
Yeah. Worst case is he doesn't play at all. Best case is he maybe plays half the season, shares time with Tucker Barnhart, and hits okay.
And that's what makes me sad.
Yeah.
Hey, this is a guy that was an all-star in 2014 and was like the next big thing.
And has never done anything otherwise.
And his best case scenario, before he even reaches the age of 30, is that he, you know, maybe if he's healthy, I think his best case scenario is he's healthy enough to start maybe 45% of the games, which would be a pretty good platoon with Tucker Barnhart, as far as I'm concerned. But that's what it's come to. A guy who had one of the 10 best single seasons for a catcher in Reds franchise history. That 2014, I think the only two Reds catchers who have ever had a better season were Johnny Bench, who had like seven better seasons, and Ernie Lombardi, who was an MVP and a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
This guy that had one of those best seasons ever is going to be relegated to a part-time role before he reaches the age of 30. And that just makes me sad as can be. Just terrible luck for that guy.
I completely agree. But, you know, I mean, baseball history is littered with those guys.
It's true.
Those guys who, like, you know, wow, look at what he could be. Look at what he might do. And then, you know, something happens. Bodies give out. And, you know, a guy never recovers. And it's not, you know, I think that Mesoraco's body might be largely sound now in terms of the joint issues and stuff, but he's spent so much time not really playing, and the return curve is so steep. And, you know, he just got a little, finger injury last year, right? That knocked him out.
Yeah. And just a fluke. It was, I think it was his foot, actually, wasn't it?
Was it?
I think so. I thought I got hit by a pitch, right?
Yeah.
But either way, just a fluke, and it's just bad luck. Ugh.
Yeah, and so I don't know. He probably has this like little hair of a like 99.9 percentile where he returns to form fully, but that's so improbable at this point as to not even factor into a best case scenario type projection.
And it really makes me worry about in the long term. He's probably not going to be a Red after this year. He's hopefully will be somewhere, but what does his career have left for him? It's a bummer. This is a guy that I don't think he may ever thought he would be a Hall of Famer, but could have been a really solidly above average catcher for a lot of years for the Reds.
I think kind of the hope from everybody was effectively that he was like the Todd Frazier of catchers.
Yeah, good, really good player. His highs were going to be really high.
Yeah, a couple all-star teams, you figured. And,
right.
And, you know, good solid years otherwise. And
yeah, and a guy you don't have to worry about. Keep him in the lineup and, you know, you're fine.
Yeah. It just didn't work out.
Poor Devin. I'm going to give you a choice the next one we're going to talk about, okay?
All right.
Best case, worst case scenario for Billy Hamilton. Best case, worst case scenario for the Cincinnati Reds, 2018 Cincinnati Reds. Or going completely in the opposite direction, who's the best defensive player you've ever seen in a Reds uniform? Which of those you want to go with?
I want to do the last one because we agree, and I want to talk about how we agree.
You know, I don't mind this either because the guy that I picked, and I'll let you talk about him, but the guy that I picked was a guy that I really didn't like a whole lot when he was with the Reds. He was not one of my favorite players. But anyway, go ahead.
Pokey Reese. I have never seen, you talk about Brandon Phillips all you want. And Brandon Phillips was a fabulous fielder, but he was not as good as Pokey Reese.
He was not. At Pokey Reese's best.
Brandon Phillips for sure. But boy, Pokey Reese just got to everything. And he was beautiful to watch in the field.
He really was. And, you know, when I posed this question in our Daily Reds Obsession segment, you know, I thought we'd hear Johnny Bench, who obviously maybe the greatest defensive catcher ever. I thought we'd hear Dave Concepcion, Barry Larkin, you know, more recent guys like Brandon Phillips, Zach Cozart, and Billy Hamilton. Even, you know, guys who were here just for a short time, Mike Cameron, Paul Janisch were, you know, really good defensively. But I really don't think, I'm like you, I don't think I've ever seen a peak defensive performance. He didn't have the longevity, but in a Reds uniform, 1999 Pokey Reese was the best. I don't think I'll ever see a better defensive second baseman. And I watched all of Brandon Phillips' career, and I love Brandon Phillips defensively, and I'm not criticizing him. You know, he won the Gold Glove that year. He won two straight Gold Gloves, 99 and 2000. And
yeah,
here's the way it looks to me. He had an OPS plus of 86, so well below average. WRC plus 85.
Yeah.
And he was a 4.3 wins above replacement. 4.3 win player that year.
It's amazing.
I mean, is the greatest defensive season in Reds franchise history by this metric called fielding runs. And 3.2 defensive wins above replacement. I mean, just,
you know, and you want to talk about fun. I mean, to go on a tangent just a little bit, boy, that 1999 team was fun. You remember that?
Oh, God. Oh, yes, I do. I remember that.
That was the Mike Cameron year. That was the Greg Vaughn year. You know, that was the lightning in a bottle year, and then the stupid Brewers happened.
Oh. It was a team that just came out of nowhere, and man, that was as fun. The Reds didn't even make the playoffs, but it was as fun a season to be a Reds fan as any, because they just came out of nowhere and they had some fun players, and you know, guys like Pokey Reese. You still had Barry Larkin playing well, and Greg Vaughn had the crazy year, and you know, just a crazy fun season. I think maybe Pete Shurik was on that team.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Oh man, yeah, I missed that team. That was Eddie Taubensy, I think, was the catcher, maybe. Mm-hmm. That time. I'm going to look that up now because I want to reminisce about the 1999 Reds.
The 1991 Reds were so much fun.
Oh, my.
That was, I was in college that year while we're both clicking around and looking them up. And I remember, I don't know how it happened. I went to college in St. Louis, but somehow there was some booster station or whatever that made it so that you could pick up WLW. And I, toward the end of the year, I was like just driving. I could only get it in my car.
Yeah.
Like it was the only place I could get it. And I would get in my car and just drive around listening to Reds games at the end of the year because it was such an exciting team. And they were, you know, right on the cusp of making the playoffs. They won 96 games that year and didn't make the playoffs technically because they finished in a three-way tie with two other teams. But yeah, here's the starting lineup. We got
I'm looking at that lineup, and it's just so many guys that I've got really sort of positive thoughts about, you know, in retrospect.
Yeah. Eddie Taubensy, Sean Casey, Pokey Reese, Barry Larkin, Aaron Boone, the one year he was really good.
Yeah, great.
Mike Cameron, even Michael Tucker. Remember Michael Tucker?
Michael Tucker, the old Royal and Brave, yeah. Who had a pretty good year.
Young hanging out there.
Dimitri. Hal Morris came back. He'd been away, and he came back as sort of a utility guy. Tobbins, he had 21 home runs.
Yeah.
Greg Vaughn had 45 and 118 RBIs.
That was the year they had Steve Avery.
Oh, well, that wasn't the... And I was wrong. Sherwood on that team, the guy I was thinking about was Steve Parris. Steve Parris, you know, 3.5 ERA, 11 and 4. Pete Harnisch, 16 wins.
Boy, no one has ever been as deluded about a pitcher, by the way, as I was about young Brett Tomko.
Brett Tomko. We loved Brett Tomko. Yeah, he never turned into...
I was convinced he was going to be the next great thing. But, you know...
Denny Nagel?
Yeah.
Oh, man. And that bullpen, listen, that was a bullpen. You know, Danny Graves was your closer, and that was one of the years that he was really good. But Scott Sullivan was an incredible setup man.
Oh, this was the Scott Williamson Rookie of the Year.
It was. As a matter of fact, at Red Leg Nation, tomorrow morning, the same time that you probably have already listened to this, actually, we got a post coming up about that 1999 Scott Williamson season, just talking about whether Jesse Winker would win Rookie of the Year or Nick Senzel. It got one of our writers, John Ring, thinking about Scott Williamson. So.
Then there's Scott Sullivan, who is one of my all-time favorite unheralded Reds.
Completely unheralded.
Just an absolute workhorse with innings out of the bullpen. That was a fun year.
And Gabe White, you remember Gabe White?
I do remember Gabe White. I remember everybody on this team really well, which tells you how engaged I was that year. Because there's always, you know, there are even sometimes guys, I feel like this year there was a player I heard about who had been on the team last year, and I was like, who?
Right.
It was a pitcher, of course, but still, I was like, wait, what, when?
Remember on that team, 22-year-old Dennis Reyes, remember that guy?
Yeah.
Best
I'm telling you, I remember all these guys.
Best nickname in Reds Juan history, though.
Guzman. They traded for Juan Guzman down the stretch, remember
That's
that?
That's right, Juan Guzman. It's Stan Belinda on that team.
Yeah.
But to circle back to Dennis Reyes.
On that team.
What's that?
There were a lot of really good players on that team.
But Dennis Reyes had the best nickname. Remember his? Do you remember his nickname? Big Sweat. Big Sweat.
I remember that. That's good.
Let me give you a Scott Sullivan stat, since we're going down the hole here. Second all-time on the Reds all-time list. Second in games pitched for the Cincinnati Reds.
Wow.
Did you realize that?
I did not realize that.
I was bumbling around one day and found that and blew my mind. So you're right. Oh, the 1999 Reds. We could talk. We could have a whole podcast about them.
One more weird one because I just clicked on him and so I have to say it. Guess how many major league innings Juan Guzman pitched after he left the Reds in 1999?
He was only 32 that year. I don't know. 400.
1.2.
I missed.
I'm assuming, I don't remember what happened after he left, I'm assuming his arm fell off effectively.
Must have.
Yeah, but he pitched 1.2 innings. He started one game for the Rays and apparently came out in the second inning and never pitched again.
Is that right?
He,
I don't remember that.
He was great for the Reds in 99.
He was fantastic down the stretch. And wow. And, you know, traded for him was B.J. Ryan. Who pitched two innings with that Reds team, but he went on to be make a couple All-Star teams.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's a fun team, and you know, and it really never materialized. But you know, we got Junior Griffey after that, and we thought, oh, we're ready, and then it was awful. But at least Adam Dunn was good on those teams after that.
He was. Adam Dunn was very good.
That's right. All right.
Circle.
We've come full circle. That might be a good place to wrap it up. Any final thoughts about the current Reds, the 2018 Reds, or even back to 1999? Anything else you want to add, Jason?
I like baseball.
Baseball's fun. I'm really looking forward to it starting again because I do think the Reds are going to be interesting this year. Are they going to win? I don't know. I hope so. I think there's
they'll win more than they won in 2017.
I think there's every reason to believe that. And so, you know, reason for optimism. This is Red Leg Nation Radio, episode number 190. If you have not subscribed yet, really would appreciate if you go subscribe. Anywhere you get your podcast, you'll find us. If you leave us a review at iTunes or wherever you can get your podcast, if they allow you to leave a review, leave us a review. Say something really nice about Jason Linden in the review. Again, as I always say, if you like us, talk about us. Give us a review. Tell your friends. If you don't like us, why have you listened this far? And maybe you should just keep your mouth shut. We're at RedLegNation.com every day talking about the Reds, even in the darkest hours of the offseason. We're talking about the Cincinnati Reds at RedLegNation.com. You can follow us on Twitter at RedLegNation. Follow Jason at Jason Linden. Follow me at Dotson C. I think that's everything I need to say about that. Jason, man, always fun, and this was another fun one.
Always a pleasure, Chad. Always a pleasure.
And at some point, we're going to file like a special podcast, just like an in-between, just talking about those 1999 Reds. What do you think about that?
I'm here for that.
All right. For Jason Linden, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. And join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.